Invite your attention tonight to Romans 16. We've looked this month, various speakers on Sunday night, at the expression or phrase in various ways about one another. And the task assigned tonight, Romans chapter 16 and verse 16, King James Version says, "Salute one another with a holy kiss. The churches of Christ salute you." And particularly the topic given was the idea of what does it mean to greet one another. I took that topic and thought about it for a little while, set it aside, wrote down a few thoughts and comments that perhaps I had thought about, went and looked at kind of the verse and made some other comments and notes about it. And then kind of somewhat unsurprising, but somewhat still surprised a little bit, and then went to the commentary a little bit and looked at what different people said about this. And almost without fail, what you find is sometimes a very short statement, sometimes a very lengthy statement, but almost every single one of them, all that they talk about is kind of the middle part of that verse. What does the holy kiss mean? And kind of, if you will, explaining it away as to why you're not going to get a kiss from me tonight. And I thought, well, that's interesting, because it's certainly worth discussion. But what about the first part of that verse? Salute one another. That's really where our topic lies, and we're going to deal with that last phrase as well. The King James Version there, salute one another. Other versions, greet one another with a holy kiss. What is it that we're talking about? What is it that should have an impact on us in our lives? As you think about this, if you're taking notes, you might make reference to a few other verses and look at them and consider their context and their locations in the epistles. I think location is something you'll want to pay particular attention to. But think about 1 Corinthians 16 and verse 20. Very similar phrase or expression found there for us. 2 Corinthians 13, 12. 1 Thessalonians 5, 26. And 1 Peter 5, 14. So four additional verses. 1 Corinthians 16, 20. 2 Corinthians 13, 12. 1 Thessalonians 5:26 and 1 Peter 5 and verse 14. And what I said concerning a context or fitting, if you think about those letters, and of course 1 Corinthians has 16 chapters. 2 Corinthians has 13 chapters. 1 Thessalonians has 5 chapters. 1 Peter has 5 chapters. They're in the closing statements. The wrapping up, the conclusion, if you will, as the authors are exhorting and kind of giving some final commentary, oftentimes in kind of a greeting fashion. Maybe greeting's not the right word, a parting fashion, a saying goodbye, is how they oftentimes fall within the context of those letters. And so let's divide the verse into just three parts then as we consider that phrase or expression. What does it mean to greet? Let's start there. Greet. We said the New King James and the American Standard both say salute. New King James and English Standard both say greet. But it's a word that literally had the idea or the concept of draw to one's self. Salute, greet, bid welcome, wish well, receive joyfully, welcome. Strong's goes further. It says to enfold in the arms, to salute, to welcome, to embrace, to greet, and even to take leave. If you want a reference to that, look at Acts 21 and verse 6. They, in that way, took leave of Paul as he was leaving that area. And so, salutations. I believe that's still a word that we occasionally use that can reference a greeting and a departure. Probably more used in now terms, more of a departure greetings and salutations or such not. I don't know. It's not a word that is necessarily in common usage. But it was here a word that could mean a greeting or a departure. But that idea of bringing one into one's embrace, bringing one close to you, sending a greeting or receiving joyfully. And as I thought about that, one of the expressions or the ideas that I wanted to stress that I think the authors continually are getting across to us, and of course God is the author here, guided by the writers through inspiration, is wanting us to know about greeting one another, reminding us who you are. Larry called this afternoon and said, "Well, I picked out four or five songs, and what ones would you like led tonight that tie in close with your lesson?" And that second one there stood out at me. Yes, let's sing God's family. Because there is a reminder there very much of we're family. Do we greet one another as family? Do we say hello? Do we look forward to meeting one another, to spending time with one another again? As I thought about that, I thought about my dad. Different people are different. We are not a very communicative family. I am not bragging, but I'm the one that excels. I'll call him once a week. For some people, that is about seven times too few. But if you knew my family, if you talked to each other about a month or 2 months, that's more normal. So, but I'll call him. And every time we go to say goodbye, we'll give everybody a hug for me. And that's his way of greeting. And in many ways, that's the idea here. As a family, we come together, and as we get to see one another, we're greeting one another, we're welcoming one another, we're receiving oftentimes one another into our homes. And Paul is giving us that concept here as he's writing up this letter to the Romans. And so I stress the concept, this is more than simply saying hello. This isn't just, how are you doing tonight, Tobias? I mean, that's a part of it. It's a welcoming, it's a greeting. But I'm going to suggest to you, especially as Christians, it ought to be a little deeper than that. And that is an area in which we can challenge one another. It is the concept of treating each other with kindness and love. Are we showing each other an appropriate mark of affection? You are not, should not be, just a stranger in off the street. Now, we get those occasionally, and we go greet them, and sometimes treat them better than we treat the people that we know. But that shouldn't necessarily be the case. There's a concern here that I'm stressing that we ought to see with one another. Let's look for a moment at Matthew chapter 9. And I realize in many ways some of these verses we're going to look at aren't necessarily a direct context. But I think they can challenge us to grow a little deeper in our greeting. Challenge us to grow a little deeper in our associations with one another. And you think about the example of Jesus. Look towards the end of that chapter. We're going to come down into Matthew 9 and verse 36. But the account here tells us that Jesus has gone about all of the cities. If you back up into verse 35, the cities and villages, he's been teaching in their synagogues, preaching the gospel of the kingdom. He's been healing every sickness and every disease among the people. Here's my point. Jesus was spending time, and he was already among all of the people. He's been spending time with him. But notice the focus that's found in verse 36. But when he saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion on them because they fainted and were scattered abroad as sheep, having no shepherd. And he said unto his disciples, "The harvest truly is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Pray ye therefore the Lord of the harvest that he will send forth laborers into his harvest." Now, 3 points that aren't original to me. In fact, ironically, they're from a sermon that I heard by Kevin Rhodes. And we're using his book on Sunday morning about studying the Bible. But he was looking at this verse, And these comments have stuck out with me. And it's first the idea that Jesus took special note here of people. He saw them. I've been guilty of this. And I'll say hello to somebody on Sunday night and I'll say, I missed you this morning. And they say, well, I don't know why I sat where I always sat. Oh, it didn't register. How many times do we see people without really taking note of them? Without really paying attention to them? Now, I'm not accusing Jesus of that. He's been with the people. What I'm making note of is the very fact that he makes special attention here. He's seeing them, and he's seeing them not just for a multitude, but I suggest to you he's seeing them as individuals. He's seeing them as individuals that have a need and a concern, and he's able to take a longer look to perceive their need. This isn't just a passing, oh, there's a multitude here. No, I see. I see that we have individuals. I see that we have different people going through different things in their lives. And you know what? We encounter that every day in the world. We pass by in San Angelo, what? We're up 100,000 plus people in this city. We see people every day. But they're the crazy lunatic that won't accelerate as we're getting on ramp of the loop. They're the person that's talking to the cashier in front of us instead of hurrying up. They're the person that we bustle by as we're in HEB or Walmart or wherever it is. We see people every day, but we don't necessarily take notice of them. Well, take that same concept now into our assembly. We come together with brethren. And how easy it is just to, hey, we were there. I noticed that people were there. Notice we had a good big crowd this morning. That's kind of the limit and extent. To stop then and realize, okay, we've got families that are hurting. We've got people that are going through medical treatments. We've got people that are rejoicing. We've got people that are going through, you know, just day-to-day struggles and difficulties of life. And the larger a congregation gets, I understand the larger it is to know that on a whole plane. But what are we doing to really get to know people? To understand their difficulties and their challenges and notice them as individuals and not just a group. I mean it when I say it's good to see you today. Maybe we can take that even further. How are things going with what's going on in their life? What is it that we know about them? What is it that we can help them with? And so as he does this, he's showing a true mark of compassion, of interest, of love in their lives. He knows the things that they need in their lives. And so not only did he see the individual, but I would suggest to you he sees the individual need that they had in their lives. We're healing sickness. We're feeding people. We're dealing with these problems of life. And yet what shined greater through all of that, he understood the spiritual needs that they had in their lives. He saw people where they were. Tie that back into Romans 12 and verse 15, where we're rejoicing with those who rejoice and we're weeping with those who weep. I hate that. Bear one another's burdens. There was an expression that I kind of hesitate with just because of its connotation, but meeting people where they're at, understanding the broad scope of what's going on in people's lives. I would suggest to you that's what Jesus is able to do, but I would suggest something else. He's able to see them as individuals. He's able to see the problems where they're at, but he's able to see the potential of where they can be. This is a white field into harvest. These are lost souls. These are souls without a shepherd. They want direction. They want guidance. They want protection. But there is a degree to which they don't even know right now what they need. But Jesus could perceive there's some need there. Whether they vocalized it to him or not, he saw what they needed. And I would suggest to you, as we greet one another, Let's grow in that relationship. We know what things are going on in our lives. We know when someone who is particularly cheery and happy comes in one day and is sullen and is discouraged. Maybe we can take some moments, some opportunities. Hey, how are things going? What is going on? Would you like to talk about it? Sometimes they don't. Sometimes they do. Sometimes they need a shoulder to cry on. You know, recognizing the things that are going on in their lives. And so Jesus saw the opportunity here. Hey, I know what you can be. That's a note of encouragement. Help build them up. Help get them to where they from where they are right now. How can we help you through this? How can we help you grow as you're dealing with these things? James?
This is a perfect time to learn about Romans 12, but in 1 Corinthians 12. It makes the point of how no part of the body gets any other part. You're not evil. And he goes on to make the point of how the body will take care of itself. I mean, everyone here can think of whether they sit there, or whether they hit their thumb with a hammer. They don't just sit there and look at it. Their hand only goes, or their foot will go where they'll fall down and they'll grab their
Where's the mute button? I don't mean to be rude. It is a great note, and we're going to get there. One another, and we're going to come back to that. So that's a great comment. But it does show, hey, we're a part of that body together. Just as our own physical body recognizes the needs and the concerns, I know, like you said, when I stump my toe, every part of my body feels it, and they reach immediately to comfort it. And that can be a challenge to us as a spiritual body to treat our members in the same fashion. Coral?
It's interesting that you mentioned all of this now. I was actually having a conversation with a brother after services today, and I was talking about, I walked up to him and asked him how he was doing. He said, is that a formality, or are you actually doing well? Because oftentimes we have a tendency to lie.
Right.
About white lies are just as powerful as regular lies. When we say, well, I'm doing fine, did you lie about that? Was that a formality? Was that a response? Because it's simply just something that you're trained to do. Are you putting on a face, or are you something troubling you? One time I had a gentleman walk in. I was greeting people at the door. And this man came in, and he said, good morning, brother. How are you doing? He said, I'm doing all right. I said, you don't look all right. Turned and looked at me in my eyes, and he began to sob. He said, I lost my wife 12 years ago, and I miss her so much. And from that moment forward, we missed services just so that he could talk and minister to scriptures, listen to him, and just let him pour out his heart. The same situation, I went through a divorce, and when I had, I was listening to a sermon this preacher was teaching on marriage, and it hit me because I missed my ex-wife, and here I was a single dad, and I went outside in the foyer, and I started crying and sobbing. And then when they dismissed everybody, I went out in the parking lot, and I was trying to dry my tears off. And an elder walked out to me in the parking lot and said, Cortland, how are you today? And I looked at him with tears streaming down my face. That's all it took was that question. And at that moment, I needed something, and I began to sob. And I said, brother, I'm doing terrible. And the man looked at me, patted me on my back as if he was embarrassed. And he said, well, we'll pray for you. And he walked away. This is a classic case of shepherds not knowing what to do with their sheep. But here you have an instance where the shepherd is looking over the sheep, anointing the head with oil, leading them to the quiet waters, giving them the pasture that they need. The physician who is analyzing his patients, if you will, and what they need. And we need to be that for our brethren. Says, you know, bear ye one another's burdens and so fulfill the law. This is not an option. It's a command. And if we neglect that, this one another mentality we should have, we're besmirching the name of Christ. We're failing to keep the commandments out of love for our Savior.
And, you know, you both bring up the challenge I had with this lesson, because when I first looked at it, I said, honestly, there is a sense here in which this is a fourth Sunday night. We used to do fourth Sunday night Q&A. If you do questions, we can still deal with those. But this 5-minute question, and it is to a degree. We can answer this verse and what it means in 5 minutes, but we can dig a lot deeper and challenge ourselves as well to do those things. But you both highlight the struggle I had. So I'm going to jump ahead and give a quick overview of a kind of an... No, you're good. You're good. But I had the same time trying to break this thing down. I was like, how do I divide up? Where is it appropriate? Where does this go? But think about this for a moment. What I want to try to look at, greet. What does it mean? It's more than just saying hello. That's the challenge. That's the Cliff Notes version. Really being interested in one another, learning about people, learning about what's going on in our lives, and then one another. We're going to talk a little bit about the reciprocal nature. This is not just, hey, people ought to be asking about me. That's a two-way street. And so that's the body tied together. We'll try to deal with that a little bit in the one another. But then the holy kiss. And I'm going to try to deal with that a little bit, just sincerity. And sometimes that's what we struggle with. I can ask you what, it's kind of just societal. How are things going to get today? I expect and I want you to say just fine so I can keep going and get on to my next task. But that's not always the case. And sometimes we need, hey, I need somebody to talk to. Okay. And so are we really sincere in asking somebody about what we're, how they're doing, that we're interested in their lives? And I'm going to challenge you to at least to a concept that's part of what I want you to think about in that idea of holy kiss, upright, sincere, righteous concern that we have for one another. And so both excellent points. I wrote here the idea of familiarity, to know one another, not be strangers. Think for a moment about 1 Corinthians 11, really the whole of the book. You know, Paul opens this book, letter, to a congregation that's struggling. And the more you read this letter, it's probably not a great surprise that they were struggling. Because they weren't unified together anyway. They weren't acting like a family anyway. They had division from their very core. And so there's actually a statement here in 1 Corinthians chapter 11 in verse 17. Now in this that I declare unto you, I praise you not that you come together not for the better but for the worse. Can you imagine that? That being stated of a congregation of the Lord's church, that I can't even really praise you. Oh, you gather on Sunday morning, it's really not beneficial. And it's showing in your worship, because as you read through this chapter and he's dealing with their remembrance even of the Lord's Supper, some have turned this into a time of feasting for some and a fasting for others. And it's not a sign of your unity. It's a sign of the dysfunction that you have as a family of God. It's a sign of the division that you have here. And that shouldn't be. There shouldn't be a part of the family here that we're saying, well, we can't talk to one another. Well, we can't deal with these things. We can't say hello. We can't even be kind and caring one to another. And so challenging us, do I know what's going on in other people's lives? But challenge myself. Am I willing to talk to my family? Am I willing to open up and sometimes share some things? Hey, I do need somebody to talk to. Hey, things aren't really necessarily okay. And it's not easy for me to talk, but we need to. And so being able to have some compassion, well, that's going to take some knowledge of people. It's going to take some understanding of people in our lives. I want to probably go through this too quickly, topic of another study, but Galatians 6:10, the idea of the household of faith. Do good unto all, especially they of the household of faith. There ought to be a concern and a compassion that we have there for one another. When you think about Ephesians chapter 2, Trent dealt with this a little in the gospel meeting, but here we have people that by nature have been opposed to one another, Jew and Gentile. We've had masters and slaves. We've had maybe rich and poor. We've had all kinds of division that has existed among us. But in Christ Jesus, that ought to be torn down, and we're united together as a singular family. No more strangers and foreigners, but fellow citizens and saints of the household of faith, Ephesians 2 and verse 10. That reminder there, we're talking about greeting. What does that mean? What does that look like? Well, it probably starts by remembering we're family. Remembering that we are united together in a singular purpose, in a singular place, in Christ Jesus. And so it's not just a passing note of greeting. It's far deeper than that. It's an interest and a concern in their lives. I think for a moment, jump over to 1 Peter chapter 1. This kind of ties the next two, this point and the next one in together. 1 Peter 1 and verse 22. Where Peter wrote and he said, "Seeing you've purified your souls in obeying the truth through the Spirit unto unfeigned love of the brethren." What have we grown into? What have we accepted as we come into the body of Christ? That statement and that command, we're not going to get to it, but I wrote down a long list of a lot of the one another passages. And how many of them say love one another? Love one another. Love one another. As it's speaking to us as Christians, we ought to be showing that compassion here, one to another, unto an unfeigned love of the brethren. See that you love one another with a pure heart fervently. Well, a sincere, heartfelt love and interest and a concern in one another is going to show, not just in our speech, not just in our handshake, but in how we treat one another. Let me zip down. Found an interesting quote someone highlighted from Anti-Nicene Fathers. So we're dealing with Clement of Alexandria about AD 220. So here, 3rd century AD. And he wrote concerning this kiss of charity, as they called it. He said, "Love is not proved by a kiss, but by kindly feeling. There are those who do nothing but make the churches resound with a kiss, not having love itself within. For this very thing, the shameless use of a kiss, which ought to be mystic, occasions foul suspicions and evil reports." Tuck that away, but the meaning behind it is, even if I greeted you with what seemed like a holy kiss, if the motive of love and interest and concern isn't really behind it, it's empty. And it's not holy. It's not sincere. And so this ought to be driven in sincerity in our lives. Just quickly then, to summarize, or one last point maybe on that, James chapter 1 and verse 27 is another similar phrase, and I thought about it a lot as I was kind of thinking about this idea of greeting. Well, the same concept is kind of here in terms of visiting. What does it mean to visit? Oh, I show up and I drink a cup of tea with you. I show up and I drink a cup of coffee with you. And I think it was probably Keith Moser in school. He said, "You show up and you drink a cup of coffee with that family, and you say, 'Well, if there's anything I can do for you, just let me know.'" And the dishes are piling up in the sink as the single mother's juggling two or three kids, or the husband's in the hospital and the grass is overgrown, and you say, "Well, if there's anything we can do to help, just give us a call." He said, "You ought to be ashamed of yourself. Go home, get the mower. Go back, cut the grass. Don't worry whether anybody knew who did it. Just do it. Show up. Take care of the dishes. Put them away. Say, hey, maybe you would have a few minutes. You can go take a nap." Okay. That's the kind of concept there of really trying to visit. Seeing the need that somebody has. And so in James 1 and verse 27, visit the fatherless and the widows in their affliction, in their needs, in the concerns that they have. That's not just saying, "Hey, I'd like to stop in for 5 minutes just to see how you're doing." There's a much deeper concern there. What is it that you need? And that won't always be expressed in language. Some people, and I have found that the church can be some of the worst people, because they will not ask for help. They'll help everybody all day long, but they won't ask for anything in return, even when they need it. And sometimes we've got to get over that to say, "Hey, I do need some help." But what we can do is not just ask, but look for those things. What is it? What is it that's going on in their lives? What are the needs and the concerns that we know that they have? Really challenging ourselves to be attentive to those things and then going and helping dealing with them. And so, if I accomplish nothing else tonight, is to just challenge ourselves a little bit, get below the idea of the word greet as simply a hello, how are you doing, to a much more, let's look into people's lives that show a true love and a compassion and a concern for them. And so greet. But then let's think about that concept of one another. And as James brought out, 1 Corinthians 12 is a great place to transition from that, because we're dealing here with the whole concept of a body, and he's talking about, hey, this dysfunctional family, this dysfunctional congregation, you need to put away some of the things that have divided you. You've been interested in, well, who's the best? Tobias can speak in tongues, and all I can do is heal the sick. Well, his is flashy. He thinks of himself kind of high. He gets to show off. Well, guess what, Tobias? Nobody understands what you're saying, so just be quiet. There's a proper use as you go through 1 Corinthians 12, 13, 14 of, hey, how are you using these gifts? And it's interesting. It centers right there around 1 Corinthians 13, love. What's your motive? If you're using your spiritual gift because it elevates you, you have your reward. That motive's not out of love. You're like a tinkling cymbal, a clanging drum. That's right. Nobody really wants to hear it. And so let these things be done in love. Well, how's the body supposed to function? 1 Corinthians 12. We studied that as our gospel meeting last year. You know, it functions together as a body. And he's reminding us there, when the body works together, the eye doesn't promote itself, the hand doesn't promote itself, the foot doesn't say, hey, I'm not going anywhere until you notice me. No, these things, they all work together in a proper and a functioning body. And so it ought to be within the body of Christ. It's one body that cares for one another. And so, again, we have the greeting, but now we focus a little bit on this concept or this idea of one another. Strong's talks about the idea of one another, each other, mutual. They're one another reciprocally, mutually. Reciprocal was one of the words that I had written down as I read and thought about Romans 16 and verse 16. Greet one another. One another. Well, again, reciprocal. That's not the concept of, well, I'm upset because nobody ever talks to me. Well, maybe we can work on that. It's true. But if I come in and I sit in my corner and I put on my grumpy face and I act like I want everybody to leave me alone, don't be surprised when they do it. If I'm not greeting other people, if I don't show myself friendly, don't be surprised when I don't have friends. I think that kind of sounds like a proverb. Proverbs 18 and verse 24. He that would have friends must show himself friendly. It's reciprocal in nature. You show an interest in others, and they're going to love and care and have a concern for you. And likewise, they'll reciprocate that back. They ought to anyway. Once I do that, if they don't, well, that's on them. I can't do a whole lot about that. I just keep loving them. One of the books I read recently, it was really about succeeding in kind of business atmosphere and getting along and doing well just in treating one another. I always kind of laugh and circle different things. I said, you know, the only comments I like in here are those that you can trace back to a biblical concept, and there were quite a few. But that was one of the things that he addressed in there. And he said, I go forth with an attitude of, I almost laugh at people. I'm going to love you, and there's nothing you can do about it. So you can be as rude as you want to me. You can shut me off. You can turn me away. But you know what? I'm going to keep loving you. And sometimes that's all we can do. But again, 1 Corinthians was mentioned. Maybe we highlight 1 Corinthians 12 and verse 26. As James was talking about, certainly, you know, we know when our body hurts, that the whole body can be affected, that it shows that compassion and concern. Whether one member suffered, all the members suffer with it. One member honored, all the members rejoice with it. Well, so it ought to be within the body. Don't get angry and upset because somebody else has been successful and I'm struggling. I rejoice with you. I don't laugh at somebody who goes through some hardship in their life. No, I have a true compassion and a concern for them and the struggles that they're going through. 1 Corinthians 13, Romans chapter 12, that other love chapter. You know, practical applications of what love looks like in our lives that we would do well to keep within our memory. And so it's reciprocal, but think about that. So we're coming together as a family and we're coming together even to worship, and do we remember that a large part of our worship is reciprocal? Now, what's our focus? I've come to pour praise and worship out unto God. Yes. But you know what? As I do so, we're challenging one another. Ephesians 5 and verse 19. Colossians 3, 16. Let's look at Ephesians 5, verse 19. Speaking to yourselves in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody in your hearts to the Lord. Okay, it's to the Lord. There's our focus. But who benefits? We're speaking to ourselves. We're singing these words. And with those words, we're challenging one another. They ought to be scriptural thoughts within the songs that we sing. Colossians 3 is going to give us much the same concept or idea there in Colossians 3 and verse 16, that the word of Christ dwell in you richly in all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing with grace in your hearts to the Lord. And so there's a focus there. It's primarily upward. But as we do so, we're encouraging one another. So we've come together to worship. Should we not be encouraging one another? It's reciprocal in nature. Well, the Hebrew writers dealt with that as well. Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 25 there. Here's Royce's favorite verse. Hebrews 10 and verse 24. Let us consider one another to provoke. Problem with Royce is he just provokes himself. I got to learn from Royce.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get there. Mm-hmm. They love for one another. Mm-hmm. Very good. Very good. Now, to Royce's point, let me be fair to him. There's more to Hebrews 10:24. I tend to be more of the pot stirrer than him. I got to give credit where credit's due. Let's provoke one another. That is an interesting word because it can mean, and it is used negatively within the New Testament, that we provoke one another. That was my children's favorite verse. Ephesians 6 and verse 4. You fathers, provoke not your children unto wrath. I liked, you know, Ephesians 6, 1 through 3. The whole idea of, hey, you children be subject unto your parents. I like that one a lot more, but they like verse 4 for some reason. But provoke, stir up. But what are we stirring up? If I'm stirring up somebody to wrath and anger, I got to fix that. But what the Hebrew writer here goes on to say, you provoke one another unto love and to good works. You stir one another up. And so, again, what I'm highlighting on is that reciprocal nature. This is done one to another, and that's part of our assembling and coming together for the good. And we ought to be helping one another. We ought to be encouraging one another. And that's got to show in our actions. And so provoke unto love and good works. And then in verse 25, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another. And so much the more as you see the day approaching. And so what happens when we do leave off our assembling together? Hey, I'm benefited from you. And I hope you're benefited from me. And if we're not coming together, you're not enjoying that, and I'm not enjoying it either. I'm not benefited from it. And so again, highlighting that very reciprocal nature that, hey, we have to encourage and strengthen one another. And certainly, that's kind of, Royce, where I had that long list of, I don't even have a count because they're in Roman numerals, of the one another passages. And that's an excellent study. If you ever want to start kind of in a word study, look up, pull the book off the shelf or type in the digital Bible search there. Just search for one another and read through all the verses of the Bible that talk about how we treat one another, how we deal with one another, how we show love and compassion one to another, and encourage ourselves in that. So many places we could go there. I want to maybe briefly think of James chapter 2 for a moment. So we think about that one another. Here's a caution for us. Now, I wrote in here, maybe in the next section, but seems like it'd fit here too. It's not wrong to have friends, and it's not wrong to have friends that are closer than others. And I'm not going to say they're his favorites, but Jesus had disciples that were closer to him, Peter, James, and John. We find them having sometimes more intimate one-on-one encounters or dealings there with Jesus that others didn't have. I mean, they're on the Sermon on the Mount. The Mount of Transfiguration is one example where he took those three disciples and they went there and they were blessed to witness that of their own. And so there's certainly a concept, it seems, through there. Hey, he's a little tighter with certain people, and that's okay because he didn't exclude everybody else, and that's ultimately the lesson we might remember. We're naturally drawn to people we associate with. We're naturally drawn to people that we have things in common with. We're drawn to people of similar, maybe backgrounds, occupations, hobbies, and so it's easy to be drawn to that, but James would challenge us, and I understand I'm twisting the context maybe perhaps a little bit, but there's an interaction here in James chapter 2 where he talks about partiality. And you consider the difference between how the rich man and the poor man is treated when he comes into your assembly, and we ask ourselves, am I creating a rich and a poor status? Maybe not by looking at their bank account, but by showing partiality. I'm going to say hello to some people, I'm not going to say hello to other people. I'm going to greet certain people that I like, I'm going to avoid certain people that I don't like. Are we showing partiality? Are we being unfair in that fashion? So really, James 2, verse 1 through 13, we don't have time to read through that whole context there, but in verse 1, my brethren, have not the faith of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Lord of glory, with respect of persons. How were they showing it? Well, if there comes into your assembly a man in fine gold ring, goodly apparel, come in also a man in poor and vile, a poor man in vile arraignment. You have respect unto the wealth, unto the wearer of the gay clothing, the wealthy clothing, and not unto him, or say unto him, sit thou here in a good place, and say to the poor, stand thou there, or sit here under my, or my footstool. Are you not partial in yourself and become judges of evil thoughts? Let's be cautious of kind of creating a division of, hey, I'm going to talk to some people. And again, that's a pattern all of us can find ourselves in, and it's a good challenge to us to say, okay, maybe I need to speak to myself. My grandmother told me one time, she said, I went to a ladies' day, and they talked about how we ought to visit with other people in the congregation and not the same people all the time. And so the speaker encouraged us to move around to different seats all the time. She said, so the next Sunday we moved to a different seat and we sat there for the next 10 years. she said it jokingly. She recognized that she kind of failed in the mission. But we have our habits. Okay, we've got our little circle and it's hard. I miss people in the back corner over there oftentimes. Maybe I hit that corner in this section right here, but I can miss out on a lot of people. And sometimes, again, a large crowd, that's just going to happen. But challenging ourselves really to maybe visit a different section, to have a broader circuit as we say hello, as we pass in the greetings, that would be good for us. And so again, consider that nature a little bit and ask ourselves quite honestly, do I show partiality? Because I formed in my mind, there's some people I'm going to talk to and there's some I'm not. And I would suggest to you that does not fit Romans 16:16, in greeting one another. He didn't give any further qualifications beyond that. Brethren, greet one another. Not just greet your friends, not just greet the people you like, not just greet the people you don't think look funny. Greet one another. And so show that compassion to each other. So, I left myself all of 2 minutes. So where all the commentators go is the holy kiss. And we've left that for the end here. Let me point out two things. A number did point out the concept and the idea, you know, many things that were instructed and commanded. We see not just the instruction, but we also see its fulfillment. We really, in a large concept, don't see this holy kiss being carried out. We're seeing it in terms of these greetings. And I would say, in to a certain degree, it's that concept, hey, I'll greet the church. And this was their common greeting of that day. And I do somewhat agree with the way that most commentators phrase it. It's the idea that Paul is focused more on the holy than he is on the kiss. And I might agree with that. Okay, in your greetings, make them holy. But where I think that's too surface level is they almost treat it as, well, don't make it a sensual kiss. I'm sure Paul maybe had part of that in mind. God had part of that in mind when he had it commanded to be written. But I'm not sure that was really the rampant problem that the church was having, that people were going around giving sensual kisses. In fact, if you look in some of those 2nd century, 3rd century writings, 4th century writings, somewhere in there, a lot of them talk about these were gender divided. And so it was the men greeting one another, other men, with this holy kiss. And it was women greeting one another with that holy kiss. Again, don't have a lot of evidence or support that I can say what was there in the scriptures. But here's what I would suggest to you is we really don't have that command or that instruction. We have other places in which there are references of greetings. And I thought I had one written down here that I can't find. Okay, right. Just give me just 1 minute. So Acts 20 and verse 1 is the one that I was thinking of. There's an embrace as they're saying goodbye or greeting Paul, knowing it may be one of their last. They're greeting him. And it mentions an embrace. There's no idea of a kiss. When Galatians 2 and verse 9 is mentioned, it mentions that they extend a right hand of fellowship. There is no necessary indication of a greeting of kiss. So I'm just saying in general, We don't see that. I don't believe he's necessarily making a command or instruction that we have to go about literally kissing one another. What is the idea of that social greeting? But make it holy. So what does that holy look more like? Again, different time, different study. Look at 1 Timothy 2 and verse 8. And spend some time thinking about and do some research on the lifting of holy hands. We've got a lot of religious neighbors that take that very literally. Well, I'm going to lift up my hands. I believe it's much more of a figurative sense. One of the descriptions I like that somebody described it as, it's showing ourselves as holy. We're living those holy lives. And so think of a kid that's ready for dinner and he comes up to his mom. Have you washed? I'll show you my holy hands. I'll show you my clean hands. That's kind of the concept I see there. And so this greeting, make it holy. What I'm going to suggest to you is holy is not just a restriction against a sensual kiss. No, he's regulating here the true matter of the heart, that it is holy. We talked about sincere love in 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 2. Is it sincere, or is it, as Cortland mentioned, you know, you have the kiss of Judas, Matthew 26 and verse 49. That's not a holy kiss. You have come to betray the Christ with your kiss. That should have been a greeting. You used it as a mark. He's the man. Take him away. That's not a holy kiss. So taking all of that we've talked about, how do we apply that in our lives? Well, is my greeting to you, even if it's by way of handshake or by way of hug, is it proper in its social aspects? But is it sincere? Do I really mean it when I say, how are you doing today? Do I really mean it when I say, I love you, brother? Do I really mean it when I'm asking about the things that may be going on within your life? Am I using it as a reminder? Hey, as we're coming together and I give you that warm handshake or I give you that hug, am I thinking about Ephesians chapter 2? That we're part of a family. We're part of a body. And I'm glad to see you again. I'm glad that you're here. And I mean that wholeheartedly, with a heart full of love, in true sincerity, that I am trying to seek to build one another up and not tear you down. More could be said. So the lesson that I was afraid would be too short, we didn't get to everything. I appreciate good comments. Hopefully they've spurred some thoughts that we can think about in our lives. What does it really mean to greet one another, and even to greet one another with that holy kiss? Are we really showing a good love, care, and compassion and an interest in one another as a family? So I see on the clock on the wall I spent too many minutes, so let me turn it to Tobias to close us out in prayer, and certainly appreciate the study. Hope you've benefited from it as well.